We have a lot of videos of the podcast and various other tutorials on YouTube. You can subscribe to our channel at mixingmusicpodcast.com/YouTube. Happy mixing and enjoy the show.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
One, two, three.
Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me as always, Sweet Lou.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Is that a satisfying nickname this week, I guess?
I'll take it. You know what? One of my favorite movies was Grind, and there was always this guy named Sweet Lou. Oh. But he was also kind of a creep, so I don't know. Mixed feelings, but I like it.
All right, sounds good. Well, today we have a really good episode planned for y'all. In the sense that this is a pretty broad topic that we want to break down different points and perspectives from. The theme of today's episode is adaptability. Now, we did have a couple episodes ago, we had an episode all about gear, and we want to take that another step as well, as adapting to gear in our modern digital age, as well as adapting in the studio. Like, as a tracking engineer, you have to be able to adapt. You have to be able to adapt your business as well as your workflow. There's different times that you have to adapt in order to survive. It's adapt or die, right? In anything.
Exactly. I can name many. Actually, the sessions I'm working on now, the use of an analog console came in handy, which many people would refuse to have nowadays, but we wouldn't be able to do what we did without it in the way that we did it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that is a really good topic to kind of jump into, adaptability. And the first thing I like to start off with is within tracking. So if you are recording, we call tracking in the industry. If you are tracking people in your own studio, at other people's studios, one of the things that you might have is a little template. Now, I don't always think that templates are super necessary, but in the professional world, they are. They definitely are. Even I am admitting that templates are something that is very necessary in the professional tracking world. And we were talking about having organized templates and organized sessions to speed up workflow. And so how some templates and some sessions, they need to be adapted for an artist. And as well as while you're tracking, there's different styles of tracking. So some people like to, have a record track. Some people like to record directly onto the track. And like, there's different ways that you can watch. So it's a good thing to watch and study different tracking engineers, because then you can see the different workflows and styles that someone uses. I know a few engineers, for example, Thirst, who I don't think I've ever seen him use playlists. He'll just drag him down and mute him. He'll just drag him down and mute him. And until you get a good take, he'll just keep him muted.
Yep.
So he doesn't really use playlists. So there's different. So how do you find adapting necessary in the tracking world?
Yeah. So I came from the thought that you don't want to just know how to use the gear. What you want to do is you actually want to understand why people actually chose that specific gear for a specific job. A lot of people will say that the 1176 Blue Stripe is the best, and then Revision E and Revision G. And you see a lot of people like, there's the diehard fans that this is the best, this is that, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't matter. I don't really care. Reason being is this. I'll take it back to analog consoles, like I said. Many people see that analog consoles are no longer needed in the extent that they were before. And I agree with that. I don't need an SSL 9000. Honestly, I can make do with an AWS 24 channel. And even though that's a lot, I've also been able to make do with just a Mackie mixer. It's funny because the needs of the session is different, but adapting to today's recording habits versus yesterday's is also the reason that you can both find a job and lose a job. Now, I know people who've never actually used an SSL, and that's okay, that's fine. But if you walk into an SSL-based studio and they say, we need to track a live band, it's all got to go through the board, and we need 6 different cue mixes, and they don't have something like an Aviom or a Hearback system, and you got to do that all yourself. You have to understand how consoles work and the theory behind why you choose one method of workflow versus another, right? Most people nowadays, they only track in Pro Tools. They can create queue mixes in Pro Tools. They do all that, so you don't really need the console. But you have to be able to adapt if you're trying to get into the professional world, into understanding the mindset behind certain gear. So when we talk about mixing, yeah, you can do it in the box. When it comes to tracking, there's certain things you need to be able to do on the way in. For instance, compression. Sure, you can compress a vocal going on the way in. Today, we're actually using distressors, but distressors are actually one of my least favorite compressors for the tracking process, unless I'm doing rappers. Rappers, I love distressors on. If I'm doing R&B vocals, I like the Retro Instruments double wide. If I'm doing standard pop, hip-hop kind of sound, the CL1B is a great fit. But personally, I love the 1176 LA-2A combination. What does this have to do with anything? It's just saying you can't stick to one workflow and expect to grow as a professional. So adapting to new and old gear, new and old ways, it's all about learning the mentality behind it and why it plays such a big role. Like, why do analog consoles still exist if they don't really serve as much of a purpose as they did yesterday?
You know? Yeah, absolutely. And I think that this also can go into the idea of adapting in a home studio. So that was an example of adapting in the professional world. Yeah. But at home, like, for example, you might have a Focusrite or something similar of that vein for an interface, and you only have one headphone output. Now, if you're tracking yourself, that's fine. But if you're tracking someone else, having a splitter is a way of adapting. You don't need to get a headphone amp, although that would be an awesome thing. But maybe for the time being, you just get a splitter. But the idea that you can adapt on the spot, the idea that you have a splitter there or something like that, right? Maybe because we can't use a CL1B, you figure out, you get an Apollo system so you can compress on the way in digitally, right? Maybe you adapt and figure, there's a lot of ways that you can adapt as well as in the home studio. So the big process or the big thing that we're trying to say with this is that you have to adapt in all sorts of ways. It's our world moves too fast and is in too much demand for you to not be able to adapt. This is a very broad statement that I think I'm going to get a lot of hate for. But I would say, unfortunately, I think that it's been pretty clear that the rock genre, the culture, was not able to adapt. At first, it was like to be a rock star was very, very sexy. Like, people were literally sex icons, right?
In fact, Steel Panther brought that back, even though it was gimmicky in the way that they did it, and very jokingly. They played their role into it just to actually sell tickets to their shows. They did the classic hair metal look and everything, and they were always doing the bulgy pants and everything.
Yeah.
And all their songs were just talking about rock star lifestyle. So yeah, you're right.
So, but I mean, like, as a culture, the genre of rock is no longer mainstream as much because the culture was not able to adapt. Who are all the sex icons now? It's literally hip-hop artists, hip-hop and R&B artists. Right now, like, that's who's cool. And granted, I think it's because that a lot of people in the hip-hop R&B world are also young. So there's a look to it, and maybe there's some age involved. But the point is, somehow, hip-hop and R&B has adapted from being this very local, niche-y, kind of specific areas into this. Now everybody and your mom listens to hip hop of some kind. Like, literally, like, there's something cool about hip hop, and the culture was able to adapt to accommodate everyone. And dare I say, Soulja Boy was a big part of it, where he had this, like, because of Soulja Boy, like, hip hop was able to go into huge untapped white neighborhoods. I didn't know anybody that wasn't listening to Soulja Boy when he was big. And it was kind of clean, even though he was talking about Superman in that hoe. And it was
wasn't it also Super Soak?
Yeah.
Something. It was something that hoe.
Yeah, but I think it's incredible that somehow they were able to stay relevant by adapting to the times. Now, as well as, like, I think that we'll stay on hip hop as a main cultural piece of genre as well, because hip hop takes a lot less work to produce. And to be honest, Post Malone and all these huge R&B, he's pop, but it's like a lot of R&B influence, hip-hop influence. Like, it's way cheaper and faster to produce and write these songs for those genres than it is to get an entire band together, hire musicians, hire a writer that can notate everything. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's a lot easier to also just, so of course they were able to adapt. Right. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of adapting that happens in the mix, in the music industry. So now I'm going to ask Lou, like, what are some ways that you see adapting taking place in the mixing world?
Well, a lot of people used to actually have to send a file via mail. For instance, back in the days of tape, ADAT tapes, in some cases, cassettes. But we don't really do that anymore. We can send files almost anywhere. And as long as you have a compatible software, you don't really have to worry about it as much either. And the reason I say this is a way that we have to adapt is because we not only have to adapt the way we actually receive sessions. Some people send out stems, some people send out the sessions themselves. But realistically, some people don't require the same tools anymore. Some people are actually minimizing their list on purpose. And I think we just spoke about this. Maxton, if you're listening, you know, I remember he was saying about how he was actually minimizing his home setup because he went from going to a bigger room down to his apartment. And what's funny is I did a similar thing. I went from my apartment, which had everything from drum sets and everything, down to the bare necessities. At one point, I just kept my converter, my monitor controller, some good monitors, and some good headphones. And that was it. I really went back down to square one. But when it comes down to mixing, you can do it anywhere. And for some people, they say, oh, well, you need a perfectly treated room and you need things like, you know, ATC monitors, PMCs, Oceanway. Who cares? Honestly, if it sounds good, it is good. And the reality is most people are listening to it on their car or in their headphones or some stereo that they bought at Best Buy or Amazon that had really good reviews, but nobody actually fact-checked or went to the store to listen to before buying it. We're listening to it on so many different mediums. The reality is I know people who have one good pair of monitors and then they find all those other mediums like AirPod Pros. I think we were talking about this, how we'll send ourselves a link from Listen To and listen to it on our phone using AirPod Pros, listen to it on the phone, and actually make mixed decisions based on how these consumer products are actually working. Back then, the consumer product was the NS10, which is, fun fact for you guys, the NS10 is not a studio monitor. It was redesigned into the studio world, but it's actually a bookshelf monitor that was sold pretty heavily in the consumer world that I forget the name of the engineer who actually started taking it to different studios, but he said, if it sounds good on this, it should sound good anywhere because it was a popular consumer item. So
it's basically the equivalent of mixing on your AirPods.
Yeah, AirPods, your JBL pill or Beat pill, whoever, I don't know, who cares? Beat pill, yeah. Yeah, realistically, if it's a product that you see everywhere, like I remember I bought Beats headphones, and I'm not trying to deter ourselves from any kind of sponsorships or anything, but
I think it's pretty obvious. We're not a huge fan of Beats.
Yeah, yeah. Not as engineers, we don't really want to buy Beats, but you have to understand the value and you have to adapt to the current market and say, we have to mix to sound good on Beats. You have to, now the loudness wars are arguably, you know, gone. Some people still mix loud. Some people now mix for streaming standards. But we have to adapt to those things. But the reason that we do this sometimes too is that have you ever listened to a song that was too loud for a specific consumer item? Like it'll start crackling, but then you listen back on another item and the crackling is not there. Some products just distort, some products just can't handle certain frequency ranges. I think a big part of what we're adapting to is we don't require a big studio anymore, and our reference material has come down to streaming quality, unless you go to the store and buy a CD or order it on Amazon, and now you're actually referencing the CD quality. But let's be honest, we're adapting to so much nowadays that the biggest difference I'm seeing is people are mixing from their home, from their car. Actually, was it Alex Toumet that said he mixed in the backseat of an Uber? I forget who it was. Somebody, I know this guy is big. His name is out there. I'm sorry that I forgot your name.
I know, genuinely speaking. It wasn't in the back of an Uber, but Leslie mixes from his truck.
Yeah, and see, people are doing that. I remember my friend Los, I sent him out 10 songs to mix. I sent him out like, or I don't know if it was 10, maybe 4 to 10, something. Shout out to Los. But he mixed it entirely on his MacBook Pro speakers. And it actually came out pretty good. It's about learning what your mediums are and where people are going to listen to them. Still having reference material, but realistically speaking, we're adapting to a market where this job can be done anywhere.
So, which goes into my point, I love this concept because one of the things that we adapt into is this idea that I see on Facebook and all these Facebook groups all the time and people arguing about it, monitoring and using monitors versus headphones. And you know what? To a certain degree, I think those arguments are valid. To a certain degree.
To a pretty big degree, but I understand where he's going with this.
Yeah, so like, I'm not going to lie to you. If I, at my level, could not have at least par or above par mix on any sort of device, then it is my fault. It is not the playback system, unless it's bad, like if there's a lot of like, you know, bad reflections.
If
like,
you're having phase coherency issues on a mono pill.
Yeah, if you're not really hearing anything, like, okay, if you're in a bad, okay, that's a different story. But to a certain degree, if I'm listening to PMCs in one room and I listen to the same exact PMCs in another room, that's going to sound different. If I listen to my ATCs, which I've had them now in three different rooms and three different positions, they sound different in all three rooms and all three positions. But I'm still able to make my mixes sound relatively the same or just as good no matter where I change and adapt to. When I'm on my headphones, now I'm, because we have this studio and it's commercially rented out, sometimes I have to mix at home on my headphones and I love mixing on my Yamaha HS5s. They're tiny, they suck, and I love it because it really pushes forward that mid-range. Like, and combination with the specific pair of headphones that I've had for years that I know super duper well, they're muddy as crap, which is how I like it, so I can really cut out that mid-range and mess with the mid-range to make it less muddy. Like, it's what you're used to, as well as like it's adapting to what you have. The only time that you will ever use the same exact monitoring situation in the same exact room is if it's in your own personal room, whether it's in your house, your apartment, in a spare bedroom, or if it's at a commercial facility. Like, even as an engineer, typically you're moving around a lot. You're never going to engineer in the same exact spot. You might have one spot that you're going to be engineering a lot more in, but if you are engineering from home, which is probably going to be most people listening from this, like people start off doing it at home and continue, it's nothing shameful about that at all. You got to learn that monitoring isn't everything. Like, you might just have to get better and you might need some lessons. You might need some practice. It might just take time. Like, to be honest, like we were just talking about this the other day. Like, I've officially spent 20,000 hours just mixing. That's not tracking. This 20,000 hours of just mixing.
Yeah.
Which is like, there is nothing that I can teach you that is like hands-on. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you have to be there and you have to make the mistakes that I have to learn the stuff that I had to. Like, and that's 20,000. Like, that takes years.
Yep.
So there's no way that like, I can't teach you everything. You can't learn it. Like, you have to experience it. I think that was one of the episodes that we talked about before where like retrospect is a bitch. Like it's like you don't know how bad you are, but like at the same time, like if you're getting better, if you want to get better, push those limits. Don't make your gear an excuse and adapt to what you have. Because honestly, like if I can make better shit than you on what you have, which I guarantee I can, I'm teasing. But I mean, like that's a lot of adaptability. And I think that's a big part of it as well. Is right now it's impossible for a company to survive in this marketplace if they make really bad equipment. Like if JBL, if the Yamaha HS5s were that bad, they would not have the money to make them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
they would not be able to justify the actual construction costs because it's like, great, we're building about 1,000 units, but we're only really selling like 200. Mm-hmm. And we have to re-up our order with our, you know, providers. And we haven't sold enough of these things. Like, might as well just cancel the line, like, realistically speaking. But, you know, you're right. You know, that's kind of the funny thing. And that's where adaptability really plays in. Like, you kind of have to understand whether or not you are trying to take this seriously, where maybe buying a pair of AirPod Pros are not exactly what you want to do. But you know that one of the comments you've gotten is that they don't sound good in my AirPod Pros. And if you've never heard a pair of AirPod Pros, in what direction are we readjusting the mix? We have to adapt the mix to the AirPod Pros now. Goes back to adapting all the time. But, you know, we can also look at adapting as, you know, sometimes you have to adapt your mindset to understand what it means to be professional. What is it? The architect's first sin is designing a home for himself and not his client.
There you go. I think that's a life lesson. I think if you buy a gift for your wife, thinking about yourself.
Yeah. Did you buy yourself a gift or did you buy your wife a gift? Let's be honest.
Yes. I think it's in that same concept
there. I think I did this once. Like Anna told me she wanted to learn how to play guitar. And I was like, oh, I'll teach you. So I bought her a Yamaha acoustic guitar. And I remember the day that like I presented it to her. Like she didn't really play it much. I think I played it much more than she did.
There you go. That's a life lesson you learn the hard way. Yeah,
my bad, babe.
But as far as adaptability goes, I mean, we can take this in any direction. I think the last direction we want to take this in before we close out the episode is adaptability with clients and conversations. like I said, with tracking as well as mixing, you got to be able to adapt for different styles, different genres in mixing, as well as for different clients and different workflows with tracking. And to be honest, you got to adapt your conversation. Like, when is it appropriate to, like, be that engineer that is extra creative, is kind of taking on more of a producer role versus you are a button pusher. You are mixing it to sound just a slightly better version of exactly what I did. Where are those lines? And you got to be able to adapt and be able to read into it. For example, I know for a fact a lot of my clients come to me because I change their songs just drastically. Mm-hmm. Like I have spent a lot of my time fixing these mixes and then making them sound professional and sound like $1 million, even though the original status was bad. And I know that I probably have a little bit more hours because Lou spends a lot more time mixing stuff that has been recorded decently well, yep, like to a certain degree, right? So there's adaptability in that as well, and knowing where the lines are and how to push them as well, right?
Yep. I mean, you've seen how I get with some mixes. Some clients, I care so much for their music that I will remix it 4 times in one night just because I really, really want it to come out perfect. And if it doesn't come out perfect at the same time, I'm not hurt. Because the reality is it goes back to the architect's first sin. You know, sometimes we mix a song for what we think is right for us only to get the note, it's not the right vibe. Or we get the note that, hey, I think it's too bright. And you're getting these notes and your initial thought may be like, what are they talking about? But at the same time, you kind of have to learn to check yourself and adapt to the mindset of, it's not about me. My client paid me for a service that they believe I can do, but I need to prove that they can trust me to do the job at the rate that we had agreed on.
Yep.
And sometimes that means button push, and sometimes that means recreate it. For instance, I do a lot of mastering for people, and one of the songs that I was sent recently had compression and everything on the master bus, and though it wasn't technically a limiter, there was a lot of compression happening. You know, kicks were sunken in and things like that. But at the same time, the song was so good, I was like, I'll work around it. You know, sometimes we adapt to a situation that we want to be in. Sometimes we adapt to a situation that we don't want to be in. But it goes back to saying, like, we have to adapt to our clients sometimes. Like, some people want to know what they're paying in advance. Some people are a little more fluid with their money and can afford to just bill me at the end, whatever the number is. You know, sometimes you get that with label situations. It's like, how much is the studio after they book the studio? You know, they obviously don't care. But sometimes you get people who want you to provide a gear list and all that stuff. And if that bothers you, then realistically, that's something you need to get used to. You need to adapt to the market you're in. But if you're doing this as a consumer, you're just doing your own stuff, then it doesn't matter for you to provide a gear list. Because realistically, we're doing this for ourselves. And if you're doing it for the love, then I don't care if you have a Focusrite. I've heard amazing things happen on a Digi 002. One, the Beatles
were remastered. Which is a really, really crappy interface, Mike.
Really, really, really old. But here's a funny thing. The Beatles remasters that everybody raved were the best things ever to ever come out for remasters for the Beatles were done on Digi 192s. Which are also seen as some of the worst converters on the market. I'm just saying, it's a poor workman that blames his tools, but it's a good workman that has the tools available to get the job done.
Yeah, I think so. And I think I want to hit on the idea that you said, adapting in the marketplace. So I think that also means, for example, we could go in so many directions with this. For example, like, even in your marketplace, as far as like, how are you going to charge for your time? Is it going to be an hourly or per song or per project basis?
Yeah.
What is everybody around you? So now we're talking about the business side of it, right? How do you adapt your business to be working in where you're at, in your situation. For example, I started my music career in small town Utah. Now, the town was small enough, but the music scene was thriving enough that I was able to make a living from it. But at the same time, I had to adapt. And when I moved out here to LA, like, I'm adapting again, and I'm learning a lot of different things about how workflow and sessions go, how communication goes. To be honest, this is a really weird thing. This is not meant to flex, but adapting with the idea of working with celebrities. Like, before, if I was in Utah and I saw a celebrity, I would probably freak out. Low-key. Like, yeah. Low-key freak out. But, like, that's another thing that I've had to adapt to, is, like, not freaking out. When they work with us, like, you're a normal client. And I think that's, like, there's adaptability. And you cannot. The moment you get stuck in your ways is the moment that your business and your art will die. And I hate to say this, but there's so many different ways to adapt. I mean, right now we're wearing one of our favorite brands is Loudon Audio. They make awesome microphones. But this idea now, this concept of buying, like, a Slate or the UA version.
Oh, the Townsend Labs.
The Townsend Labs or the Antelope version of, like, modeling microphones.
I forget the Antelope model.
And then I know that Antares has the mic mod, which is, like,
old school, but old they school, actually right? just updated it.
Yeah, there you go. So I think that, like, is it better? Now the question for you might become, is it better to invest in a $1,000 modeling mic that can model hundreds of thousands worth of microphones? Or is it better to just buy a single $1,000 microphone that does one sound, but that does it really well? Or, like, a $3,000 microphone? And I think that us as engineers, we might side as, like, in a commercial space, there is a lot less clout and branding. And I hate to say it, as a commercial space where people come and rent in our space, like, the brand does matter. And the sound does matter a bit. But, like, maybe in your home studio situation, I genuinely think a Slate or the Townsend Labs or the Antelope will be better for your purposes. And that's the thing. You got to figure out how to adapt. And I love what you said about sometimes the way that you adapt is not the way you want to adapt. It's the way that the others want you to adapt. Sometimes you got to figure it out. And it's okay to think outside the box. There's actually someone this week that started a venue where I was living before in Utah. Mm-hmm. And the venue, they're doing it a totally different way. It's you rent the venue. So if you're a band trying to book, you book $50 an hour to be at the venue. You keep 100% of the ticket sales, and they will record from the mixer a rough mixed down version, and you get that free. So you're almost paying for recording time, but with an audience.
Yeah.
So it's like this genius.
That's a smart plan.
That's a really awesome adaptability thing. This is a few years ago. I think this is before the pandemic. BTS, the Korean boy band, made, I think it was like $25 or like $35 or $25 if you're a VIP BTS fan club or whatever, $35 if you wanted to watch this live stream of this BTS album.
Yeah.
And they had hundreds of thousands of viewers that single night. That means they made like a dozen or more million dollars from streaming, right? And here's the thing. I'm not going to say any names, but I'm getting really passionate now. Is that there were venues where I was from, that where I was in the last 4 or 5 years, there were venues out there in small town Utah that did one direction was to adapt into live streaming and adapt into taking donations through live streaming, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. To somehow still provide value. And there was another venue that only relied on, please give us money because we're in trouble. And they did not adapt. And to be honest, I hate to be extreme about this, but that company should go down. Like, if you do not adapt, like, you deserve to die as a business. Like, that's honestly what it comes down
to. So cold.
It's really cold. And it's really hard. And I actually really wish that company really well, and I would never, ever. But I'm saying that it shows where your heart is, and it shows how much you're willing to, like, work. Because the fact of the matter is, surviving in the music business is not easy at all. At all. It moves too fast, and it's way too competitive. So if you aren't even willing to do something that's as simple as adapting, that's a whole nother issue.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm done with my rant. I'm sorry. I got a little bit passionate there. But is there anything else you want to say?
Yeah. I mean, realistically, it just boils down to this. You kind of have to understand where you are, where you want to be, and move accordingly. You know, you want to be a professional? Act as if. If you want to be, you know, a home studio, single artist, kind of no management kind of deal, that's fine. Honestly, I think I've brought him up before, but Austin White, a friend of mine, I give him credit for so much because he does his own marketing, does his own website, does his own videos, does his own photos, does his own production, does his own mixing, mastering, even recording. He's a one-man hustle. And not only that, he still runs a separate business where he actually helps marketing for other people. I don't know if he's still doing that, but like I've seen the dude model, I think, for Red Bull. You know, dude's making it happen on his own. He adapted to a marketplace that really has endless amount of, I guess, directions in which you can run. But he found the ones that worked for him, and he's been able to pay his bills with it. He's managed to create an artistry that, honestly, I respect a lot. I like a lot of his music. I follow him all the time. And every time he's releasing new content, I'm excited for it because the way he does it is so good. But he's doing all this without a manager in the marketplace where many artists are trying to break through, but it takes so much to break through. How are you adapting? What is it that makes you stand out as an artist? If that's your lane, go that lane. If you're a professional, talk to us. We can tell you about what it is to be professional. If you want to be an independent engineer and you just want to work with independent artists, talk to us. We both did that. But realistically, adaptability is just understanding where you are and where you want to go. You know, nobody takes the wheel of a car and just drives straight and never makes a left or right turn or has to hit a curve or anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We don't just drive straight forever in life. So you have to adapt in everything you do. It's just a matter of knowing where you are, where you want to go, and what it takes to get there.
And talking about adapting, the last thing that we'll say is the Mixing Music Podcast, we're so thankful for you listening. We just hit 40,000 listeners, which is absolutely awesome. And
it's
an amazing. Thank you so much. And I'm really proud to have been able to, you know, together we've been able to make value for y'all. And I want to say that we as a show are constantly adapting. The beginning episodes are not what they are right now. Like now we post videos on YouTube as well of us talking. Like we're trying to adapt more. One of the few things that we'll see is in the future is potentially some more sponsorships as well as some more courses that we want to do, start giving out, as well as putting on free courses on YouTube. Today we were talking about the idea of developing our own plugins.
Yeah.
As well. And
our own curriculum.
So we got to figure it out, like curriculum, like
yeah.
Lou has experience building out curriculums for audio schools.
Yeah.
So where you're going to see us adapt as well and how we can provide more information to you at a better pace, as much more efficient. So to be honest, like, cause we want to give you a reason to give us money. Like that's adapting. That's real.
Yeah.
Like that's not us being fake. Like that's real. Like
having a professional career is the fact that you can actually call it a career. Have you ever met somebody who said, I have a career in this and was never able to pay a single bill with it?
Yeah, no. So I think with that, like on that note, like I hope that you find ways to continue to adapt and never be ashamed of what you have and the tools you have. Like we're all blessed to be able to do music. Music is something that we can do forever. It is something that takes a lot of time. It's something that is very competitive, but just do it because you enjoy it. Continue to do that. Adapt to where you can. And happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
1, 2, 3.
If you'd like to take advantage of my free guides and online videos, please check out links.dkmixes.com. That's links.dekeimixes.com.
Yo, what up? It's DK. Thank you so much for listening to the Mixing Music Podcast. I just want to do a quick plug about Antares and Auto-Tune. Antares makes the original industry standard Auto-Tune that we all know and love the sound of. We are sponsored by them, so if you visit mixingmusicpodcast.com/Auto-Tune, we do get a small kickback from every purchase. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Please enjoy this episode.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.